Welcome to the new RNIB NA podcast, a new monthly podcast from RNIB in Northern Ireland for people affected by sight loss. Listen up, speak up, break down barriers. Joining me on this perilous adventure that we have embarked upon today is Micheál Smith, who sat across the desk from me. Hello, Micheál.
Hello, yes, I'm Micheál. I'm the campaigns officer with RNIB here, and I work in the policy and campaigns team. And Joe's a good colleague and friend.
Well, Micheál's already beat me to it because he's introduced himself properly. I'm Joe Kenny, in case those of you who are listening don't know my voice, and I work in the PR and communications team here at RNIB in Northern Ireland also. So listen, for the next half an hour, we're going to discuss some of the key policy and campaigns work that RNIB Northern Ireland are currently involved with. We're going to have a couple of guests. We're going to talk to Robert Shilliday, the country director for RNIB in Northern Ireland. So, Micheál, turning to you, well, I'm sort of looking at you now, but tell me a little bit about yourself. I mean, not everything, obviously, but just, you know, what do you do in RNIB and where have you come from?
So I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage here in that I don't have a practiced radio voice, unlike yourself, Joe. I'm going to have to come onto this properly.
Oh, it sounds good to me.
So I've been with RNIB for about 3 years. As you can hear from my accent, I'm from Dublin.
He was up bright and early this morning to get from Dublin. You obviously don't live in Dublin now, do you?
No. We live in West Belfast. My wife and myself live there, and our three kids are scattered around the place, so they're all off living their own adventures, which is lovely.
Super.
I work on the policy and campaigns team along with a couple of colleagues. So there's myself, Colm Delaney, Mary Alice Clancy, and our manager Paula Beattie. And between the four of us, we our main task, I guess, the way I like to say it to myself is we break down the barriers for blind and partially sighted people. And that's what kind of attracted me to the job in the first place. I would have come into this job from a disability advocacy background, where I worked up at Action Ability Belfast with some brilliant colleagues up there for working on helping people find their voice and stand up for their rights. And I guess there's a lot of that in what I do here. So our team, I guess we work to influence policy at the government level. We advocate for social change. So we actively support local groups and individuals to bring pressure for social change and to get the rights and entitlements that they should have. We work alongside sector partners on disability rights. Our whole business is to advocate for a fully accessible society. And as I said, removal of barriers for full and equal participation for people.
So there's a lot there, obviously. Mm. And the first things, I suppose, what I wanted to say, I should have said this at the top of the podcast, was we want this podcast to be, you know, led by our listeners. So obviously you're talking a lot there about how we want to break down barriers for people living with sight loss or with vision impairment. I know that there's a lot of campaign work that we're doing right now, and I know that people are genuinely interested in what we get up to in terms of, you know, our key campaigns, our key asks. So I suppose not to overload this, and like we're going to be releasing this podcast monthly, and we're going to talk about different things in depth and have conversations around all that. The key thing is to unpack some, I suppose, of the main campaigns that we're involved with, and to talk around it as to why it's important, why it matters, and how you, the listener, can make a difference in your own community and in an everyday way. You know, isn't that more or less what we're here to do?
Yeah, I guess all of us on the various teams have an overview of the work we do, but that there are, of course, there are going to be the experts in different discrete areas. So I certainly wouldn't presume to speak at length on some of the particular topics. But for example, we'd be looking at asserting the need for earlier intervention and prevention of sight loss. We work on advocating for accessible transport and travel, as you know. Colm in particular works on that side. I work on the rural end of it. We look to advocate for safe public spaces. And a really important part is accessibility of communications from particularly healthcare providers or accessible voting.
One of my particular passions, that one.
I know. One of the other things that we certainly work with colleagues on is inclusive education and inclusive employment. So there's a number of things on the boil there, the kind of the big ticket asks that we would tell people decision makers that we want to see changes in. But then there are kind of more immediate on the ground things. So some myself and colleagues are working pretty hard on the welfare reform changes, for example. So RNIB, we're working very hard on that.
Yeah, that's a particular. Well, it's in the news quite a lot recently there.
Yeah, and I think the changes that were brought about in July, I think Paula described it as a victory for blind and partially sighted people because they campaigned very hard against the proposed cuts for many reasons. I mean, those payments, there's a lot of myth and, I guess, fabrication around welfare that needed to be challenged, and payments often cover crucial costs that aren't seen, and including in our field, be assistive technology or care allowances or just even getting about, all the things that would open up the world for people that live with a disability.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm going to just come out and say it. I think RNIB has done a lot, and certainly we have too in Northern Ireland, done a lot to challenge that. This sort of media, it's sometimes trumped out by the media, this stereotype about how people who are in receipt of welfare benefit are somehow therefore, you know, scrounging or taking money that they don't deserve or something. This kind of, it's behind the door narrative that's really unhelpful. And like it's simply not true. And RNIB and others have challenged this from, obviously, and have done for many years.
That's right. And I think it's really important that we take a pan-disability approach to this, that we engage with partners in the sector, that we all stand together to challenge these things. And the essential thing is that disabled people should be allowed to live independent and dignified lives.
Yeah.
And that's regardless of whether they can work or not, or
Absolutely.
Want to work or not.
Yeah.
You know, so everybody should have a choice around how they live. And I think the weaponization of people's disability against them is something that I'm really eager to challenge.
I know that a particular sort of passion of yours is, we call it grassroots campaigning. And I'm very aware there's people listening to this. There's firstly the term grassroots and secondly the term's campaigning. It can sometimes turn people off, but there's a lot of kind of stereotype or a lot of kind of presumption around that, isn't there?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think from my experience over the last couple of years, I think looking to help people get into the campaigning space has been a little bit difficult, because if somebody hears campaigning, they think, oh, they want me to be involved in politics, or that's not something I'm interested in.
And making speeches in the Epid Stormont, which is not necessarily
going to have you throwing stones just yet. No, I think the way I think about my job is it's more about helping people have their voices heard.
Yes.
In a way, it's like being a microphone and an amplifier for people.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
And I think I've had a couple of successes with members of our community. I think that the groups that are starting to coalesce are starting to get a little bit more confident in what they're doing. I mean, historically, there have been the very strong legacy campaigns groups over in Bangor, Coleraine, Ballymena, and there had and there's been great campaigns work in Derry. But then more recently, we have the Belfast Sea Change group, who've been going coming close to 2 years now.
Wow.
And they are really finding their feet and really getting confident. But then equally, we have the Charles Bonnet Syndrome, so CBS Action Group, who just were formed this summer. It would be great to get more people involved, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
But they have great plans for bringing attention to CBS Action. And the way I was trying to describe this to somebody the other day is, you know, there are awareness days for different disabilities. I think making people aware of Charles Bonnet Syndrome is particularly important, because it's a very misunderstood condition. In fact, it's had people sectioned, you know, that clinicians even think that people are having these hallucinations are psychiatric rather than related to their sight condition.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real urgent issue to change. And we also hope then that we're going to get some young people together to form a young person's issues a specific campaigns group. And we have a couple of interested people already who are driving this. I won't name them or embarrass them here, because hopefully they'll turn up
later edition.
Yeah. So there's lots of things happening, and it is about helping people find their voice and speaking out.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, I was going to unpack this a wee bit. So if I'm listening to this and I don't know much about that world of campaigning or speaking out. Why bother? Why should I? If I sat at home listening to this and I'm a person with sight loss, or I'm a family member or friend or colleague or ally, as we say, why would I campaign? Why should I go out there and sort of put my head above the parapet, so to speak?
That's a good question, Joe. It's one that I kind of wrestle with in trying to convince people to take part, I guess. I always come back to there's a great quote from Inez McCormack, who you might have heard of. She was a social action campaigner in Belfast for a number of decades. But Inez said that the first noise, the first row and the first shout and the first argument has to come from you. Because if you don't say that you matter, no one else will. And that always stuck with me. I mean, we are, as an organisation, always going to stick up for people, but I think it's far more powerful when people are empowered to stand up for themselves. And people are shown that they're able to do it. There's examples all around us. And I guess one thing that I'd like to let people know is we would never expect more from you than you're willing or able to give.
Mm-hmm.
I firmly believe that everybody can contribute something, and they shouldn't be held back by thinking that they don't have enough to give.
Yeah, so it's not like, I think it's really important too, again, and going back to that whole thing about campaigning frightens some people. And some people love it, by the way. I'm not saying all people think like that. But what I mean is, they think it's meetings with politicians, it's going to Belfast every other day. It's not, as you say, it's as much as you can offer or you want to give.
Indeed. And like, I can even think of a couple of people that spring to mind who are members of groups who can be generally quite silent, but that doesn't mean that they're passive. And I think that the power of a collective is in its number, it's in its bodies, its solidarity. So even if somebody is there, you know, taking part in a meeting, maybe not speaking up, but at the end agreeing with what's been agreed at the meeting, or yes, or chipping in to say, well, I'd like that changed. Every element of a collective group is as important as the other, whether they're loud or not. And I do think that people have more to give than they think. And I think our voices are really valuable and we shouldn't lose sight of that.
What do you think about, it feels like at the moment in 2025 that every person, every time you turn around, somebody's ranting about something on TikTok or Instagram or you know, YouTube. And so there's always a crisis or a cause or a problem or a thing that needs addressed. And some of them are absolutely genuine. And, well, you know what I mean? If you care about something, it's important to you, isn't it? So how do you then make your issue matter? How do you make your cause stand out?
Well, I suppose the culture of these islands in particular is to, when you grow up, is to be quiet, isn't it? It's to, you know, you're told that the empty vessel makes the most noise. Don't draw attention to yourself. That
stiff
kind of
upper
thing.
Lip.
Stiff upper lip. Yeah.
Which what's is the word? Saying I always loved.
Keep calm and
carry on.
Carry on. That drives me nuts as well.
Exactly.
Keep calm. No, I don't mind people showing a bit of passion and a bit of anger. I think that there are a lot of competing voices, but I also think that there's not a finite amount of airspace. I think that there are always avenues to get your voice heard. It's not like we're in like the old days of just a couple of channels on the TV. Here we are in a podcast that's hopefully going to reach a lot of people that are
tens of thousands, we hope.
Oh, I'd say more than that. But you know that there are avenues to get your voice heard, certainly. So I do think that a really important thing to remember is that change starts with you. One thing I've learned from my life in campaigning, but also in different elements that, you know, I'm type 1 diabetic. Over the past 10 years, what's changed my approach to my condition and to how I view disability is peer support.
Mm-hmm.
I think peer support in all kinds of things, recovery from illness, recovery from addictions, recovery from cruelty or injustice, is all bolstered by peer support. And standing beside somebody and lending your voice to theirs, or lending your shoulder for them to lean on, is one of the most important things we can do in this life and in the way the world is turning at the moment. I do think that we all have something to offer. I'm probably repeating myself, but at the same time,
it's worth repeating, Micheál.
It is. I mean, and for a lot of people, having RNIB, for example, to speak for them is enough, or is about all that they can feel they can contribute. But there are other people who have voices and who can shout up and cause a ruckus and get the challenges of what it's like to live with a visual impairment condition, mm-hmm. or a disability of any type, to get it into the ears of people who can make decisions that are going to change society and change our lives.
Yeah. And I think, too, from my own personal experience, because I should have maybe said this too at the top of the show, that like I'm totally blind, and I should have said I'm as blind as it gets, you know, no light perception. But in my life, sometimes people go, well, why do you need organisations like RNIB or any other charity for that matter? And it's because I think with that collective approach and that collaborative approach that RNIB adopts, we can speak to whether it's the health minister, say, or the Department of Infrastructure, or, you know, any other statutory body, or we can talk to individuals, we can talk to, you know, our listeners today. We've got multiple channels, multiple avenues that we can explore and obviously use and, you know, bring to bear influence.
Yeah. I played football for years until diabetic retinopathy actually brought it to a crashing halt about 4 years ago.
Oh.
I mean, I wasn't Maradona or nothing, but what I loved about that game was coming off the field, whether I'd played well or not, knowing that I'd stood up for the person beside me. Mm. I'd come off sweaty, hurting, probably a bit angry or exhausted, but I knew that I'd defended my teammate. And that's one thing I miss from the main thing I miss from sport. But
yeah.
I do get that feeling from my job. And I do like to try and instill that in people as well, that you're not just standing up for yourself, you're actually standing up for your pal.
So I think what we can take from this is that disability is a team sport.
Indeed, yeah.
Not an individual sport.
And you go in studs up.
Yeah, love it, love it, love it. With me today, as I live and breathe, folks, we are very pleased to welcome Robert Shilliday, Country Director of RNIB in Northern Ireland, to our inaugural podcast. Robert, you're very welcome.
Oh, Joe, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Where have you come from today, Robert?
I've travelled in from deepest county down.
Deepest county.
The foothills of the Mourne Mountains.
Lovely. We thought it'd be in episode one of the podcast, we'd have the main man, the Country Director, in to basically sort of, obviously get to know Robert a little bit and talk about sort of the broader sort of view of RNIB in Northern Ireland. What do we do when we're not campaigning?
Kind of lends a bit of authority to us as well.
Yeah.
So, Robert, what would be your favourite part of the job?
I think it's definitely got to be getting out and about. And that's not just to avoid work. Truly it is. So I've been fortunate to, for example, most recently, at the end of June, was out with Olive's Group in Hillsborough. And it's just not about the peer support, but I mean, Olive and her volunteers there are trained out to be public speakers, so they go out and speak on behalf of RNIB. They change hearts and minds, they change attitudes. Also, when you spend time, the more time you spend with people who live with sight loss, the more you realise some of the presumptions you have about what's important maybe aren't as much. So it helps me get real, it helps me recalibrate, and it helps me lead discussions, and it gives me some sort of authority when I go to the table in London, for example.
I love what you said there about, the whole idea of presumption. And we actually mentioned that in the earlier bit of the podcast there about people always presume. And I suppose it's our job to try and educate them so they presume correctly.
When I look at my role at RNIB, there's obviously the bit about change in hearts and minds, the policy part of it. But actually, spending time with people who actually have lived, like yourself, like Micheál, who have all lived experience, I don't. So that changes my thoughts, and that's a big part of what we've got to do. We've got to change people's perceptions, and I think once you do, they start behaving in a different way. Because most people are basically very decent. And like myself, before I joined the organisation in 2018, ignorant. I would have thought, as a person with sight loss, as a person just with a cane or a guide dog, and I would have thought they couldn't see anything. And of course, that's nonsense. And it creates a level of prejudice. You know, someone sees someone using a mobile phone and they go, well, what are you doing there?
Yeah.
I thought you said you had sight loss. So it's little simple things like that.
So Robert, as country director, I guess you have to have an overall view of the organisation. What's that actually like?
That's a really good question, because I think what people assume is that you spend a lot of your time around policy work, around communications, working with MLAs, etc., etc. But the truth of the matter is it's got to be more broad than that. So you've a big responsibility to make sure, number one, that you understand how the organisation works across Northern Ireland, also how that fits into the wider UK picture, making sure that we're pulling together. I mean, with some great examples of that, by the way, like the tech fair last year in Lisburn's a great example of, you know, people coming from all parts of RNIB putting their best foot forward. Funding has become increasingly important. So those are always looking for opportunities to do that, to make sure we maintain what we have and we expand what we can. Troubleshooting, building relationships. I mean, it's, I think we've done very well over the years in terms of the relationships we have within health, Department of Communities, Department of Infrastructure, but also with our fellow sight loss colleagues in Northern Ireland, working together, etc., etc. And just being very, very sensitive to the fact that the external and internal picture is always changing. Mm-hmm. So how do we put our best foot forward to get the best for people living with sight loss?
Because I think we said at the podcast, what we want is to let our listeners hopefully come forward, let us know what they want to hear more about. But it's the world is changing faster. It seems like it's changing faster and faster with AI and with post-Brexit and all sorts of, you know, external influences.
Well, I think, look at that, it's really interesting. So we've done a piece of research across the UK just now. Didn't tell us anything we didn't know, but it underlined some things that are really important. Number one, the importance of people having the skills to get about, to make journeys independently and feel safe in doing that, and how important that is. The importance of tech and underpinning all of that. You talk, Joe, about a changing world, and the world is so much changing. So being able to take hold of the things that can give you more independence, more freedom. And then the one that I think sometimes gets missed, and it's so important because it feeds into so many other things, is peer support. So we can do all that we can to change hearts and minds in this world. We can educate people about tech, but at point of diagnosis and in the years and months after that, that importance of peer support and connection and feeling that you can access support whenever you want or talk to people whenever you want is so important, and we can't lose sight of that.
I suppose that leads on nicely to talk about some of the other services that we are available right here in Northern Ireland for people who are affected by sight loss.
We talked about point of diagnosis, Joe. So the fact that we've got full coverage here in Northern Ireland in terms of our eye care liaison officers, or in eye clinics, of course. So when someone gets that news in terms of what's going to happen with their sight, that there's someone there who, number one, you can talk to, but number two, who can then direct you to all of the other support services, not just in RNIB, but across the piece. Mm-hmm. I think our community workers are incredibly important, because if you think those are the people, quite often, although that's your first, you know, point of contact, those are the people who, I've heard it on a number of occasions, in effect save people's lives, you know what I mean? And bring people together, build them with confidence, et cetera, and then link them into all of the other things, like our wonderful products and advice store here in Belfast, where people can come and get assistive aids, assistive tech, feel more confident. We still do have our tech work here in Northern Ireland as well. Jason, our volunteers, doing great work at the Hub here in Belfast. And very recently, the Apple Store has basically put their hand up to support us even more in that space. Important,
very exciting.
Much more to do, of course. Our volunteers, I mean, I was such an important piece of what we do. And I know, Michal, in your work, that's very important as well in terms of campaigning, working with people on the ground. But, I mean, we were at the wonderful Rev Up Festival, in the foothills of the Spurrin Mountains, Joe, somewhere I believe between Dungiven and Limavady.
Yep.
Loads of volunteers giving up their Saturday and in some cases their Sunday to come down and support our work and to talk about their own lived experience as well. So important and so often gets overlooked in an organisation, but for us it's actually very underpinning. to tell you the absolute truth. I mean, I could go on in terms of the services that we have. And of course, we have our helpline that's there for people to ring into as a point of contact, which you can just basically say, hey, Alexa, ring the RNAB helpline, and you can get straight through to that. So
I'm smiling because I bet there's a lot of Alexas that's just gone off. Apologies, folks.
Very good point. But you know, education and employment. You have got to be very careful because they're going to forget people and they're going to sort of call in and
don't
say,
worry,
"What's going on, Joe?
Anyone's all right."
Just add in anything I forget, Joe. No, but I mean, we're in the office today, and just a couple of offices down, we've got members of our employment team working with people to develop their employability skills or to help them stay in employment. That's so key.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things are joined up, and I suppose that's the point I was trying to make earlier, Joe. It's an ecosystem. It's not just one thing that sits on its own. They all work with each other. We've done a lot of work in Northern Ireland around accessible health, and we now have this. Well, many listeners may not be aware of this, but this MyCare app that's been released right across the Healthcare Trust, where you can go on and set communications preferences.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't get at that if you haven't had training in tech and how to set up accounts and access things and have the confidence to do it. So all of these things are underpinned. You go out with one of, I was in Ballinahinch a couple of years back, wonderful, not wonderful Ballinahinch. Well, Ballinahinch, you're lovely. Basically a peer support group, but the conversation started up about sensory support teams and the support that they can give you in Northern Ireland, because the individual had a recent diagnosis, didn't know where the support was, and all those people around him who had gone through those systems and knew how to do it, the next thing he was going away and they were saying, I'll come with you, I'll go with you.
Yeah.
So all of these things are so tied up together, and we've got to be very, very important when we look at how we're set up in Northern Ireland, that we understand that and how we plan for the future. That's really important, particularly around planning for the future, future funding, what we need to deliver here, what's important to people.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when you're out with those groups, or Michael, when you talked to some of your guys that you did the grassroots campaigning with, it's a real education, because as I say, I go back, what sometimes you think is a priority isn't, and you have to listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that strikes me, we mentioned peer support earlier, getting people back into the community or engage and being able to engage with other people depends on a load of factors, but one of the most important ones is transport, and I'm particularly concerned about rural transport. We have some good partnerships with providers in rural areas, and we're constantly being told about the pressures that they're under. I think one of our most important policy areas is making transport accessible, and particularly making sure that it's, you know, people are allowed to live their lives as fully as possible.
Yeah, like that. I think we have a particular challenge here in Northern Ireland, and it's interesting because it allows us actually to get out into another area that I didn't mention, which is around community social action. Mm-hmm. So we've agreements in place now with both Derry City and Strabane District Council and Ards and North Down Council. Those areas are massively rural. I mean, we can talk about Strabane, we can talk about Derry, Londonderry, or we can talk about Bangor and Ards.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at that map and you look at people's access to community rural transport, it ain't great.
Yeah.
So a lot of the services and support tend to be in the urban centres where you come into. So how do you get people to that? We talk about waiting lists. For example, and the work that obviously, thankfully, the Minister is now doing around that, and he's made recent appointments to underpin that work. But if you can't get to the appointment in the first place, indeed, that's problematic and puts a lot of pressure on you. If you can't come and be part of that peer support group, then you're going to get isolated, etc., etc. So the work that you and colleagues are doing in that space, I think, is incredibly important. We've got opportunities through the work in Derry, Strabane to put focus on that, similarly with North Down and Ards. And I know Elaine and our Community Social Action Team are going to be a big part of helping you do that.
That's
on
right.
The ground. The existing volunteers that we have in place, like Rory McCartney up in the Northwest, and Ken now in North Down and Ards, are going to be so important in doing that. But yeah, for me, and there's learning there as well. So we know we've got a project happening in Wales at the minute called See Cymru Differently, which is very rural focused, because Wales is also a very rural community. And these are, we're going to be looking to see what are the sort of learnings we can pull out of that. But yeah, you're right. Northern Ireland, It's not by accident that, you know, one of the biggest occupations here is farming. It's mm-hmm. because we're rural, but that has particular challenges when it comes around community rural transport and connecting people with services
yeah.
and support.
Yeah, big time. I suppose before I let you go, Robert, and I suppose it's a little bit mean because I've sort of I'm going to drop this on you, but I make a deal with it. If you tell me yours, I'll share mine. If you had a magic wand on a Friday, what one thing? What would you do right now that would make a difference for people living with sight loss in Northern Ireland?
It's other people, Joe.
Mm.
So that's what it is. The thing that disables or sets up the barriers is other people's attitudes. If I could tomorrow give people, or today indeed, with that magic wand, give people the knowledge that I now have that I didn't have 7 years ago, I think that would make a tremendous change. It would make a change to those people who set up inaccessible IT systems, for example, or who design town centres in such a way as to almost, you know, potentially cause injury to blind and partially sighted people, or just stop them going there in the first place.
Yeah.
When people are planning transport across Northern Ireland or making decisions around infrastructure, they would think about it in a different way. When someone saw that person on a mobile phone who they thought, well, what's going on there? Mm-hmm. They would understand that so much better. And so, you know, when you build up all of those things together, you begin to get to that place that we want to go, which is to create this place as being the best place in the world to live if you're blind or partially sighted. And I think if we could do that, that would be massive.
Micheál, what about you? I'm gonna drop that on you as well, since you're here.
Thanks a million. I guess, you know, just as Robert was speaking there, I think one of the problems in... this is going to sound very deep, right? One of the problems in society at the moment is a lack of empathy.
Mm.
My magic wand would 1,000% change people's empathy to the max so that you could imagine what it's like to live somebody's life with the strictures or the obstacles put in front of them, and would make you want to go, that's not fair. I'm going to do everything I can to change that. And that ranges across disabilities,
ranges
across all kinds of challenges in life.
Well, that's a great call. Yeah. That's a great call.
But that's just me trying to win some kudos here.
well, people know you're fundamentally not a very nice person. So, Joe, so show us yours. What would the thing be for you?
This is really hard. And I know that's why I said it, because it's like, of course, we'd change lots of things if we could. I think mine goes, my thoughts drift towards school leavers and that age group of 15, 16, 17, 18 year olds who have sight loss, and they're sort of, school's great, isn't it? Because you're told what to do, when to do it, and then you go home and you're told what to do and when to do it.
Sounds like RNIB.
So, but
if only I had that level of organisation, yeah. Micheál. If only.
But then you arrive at this crazy time of life when all of a sudden people stop telling you what to do and when to do it, and you've got to do it by yourself.
Mm.
And that can be very frightening, and it can be a real time of, in the charity sector, we talk about transition, but it's that time when you're becoming a young adult. And I wish that young people had more information and more independence and able to just make that transition from being a kid at school to being a young adult with the world, basically the world's at your feet, but what do you do with it?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of knowledge and confidence.
It's timely as well, because the exam results are just out, I guess, for a lot of people, and
yeah,
it always comes back to support, doesn't it?
I remember going to university, first of all, and I went to the college in Hereford, RNC College, and it blew my mind. Like, there was people wondering about drinking and doing all sorts of mad things, and actually doing education as well. Sometimes, maybe. But it was just a world away from what I was used to, because I went to a boarding school, Jordanstown, back then. And you basically had to grow up very quickly and learn a lot of things that most people already knew.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, you know. I lived a sheltered life.
But now look at you.
No, Joe, that is a great, it's a great shout. I mean, one of the first things I did with the organisation was I attended, unfortunately, it was the closing celebration for the Realise project that looked at those transitions and the skills and tools that young people needed. And apart from spending the first, I suppose, half hour of the day talking to a llama, which was unusual, I thought this is going to be a great job working for RNIB, talking to llamas. There was just so much when you heard the young people talk about the difference that project had made in their lives. Exactly right, Joe. Equipping them for those transitions. And we had a discussion here in the office, I think about 3-4 weeks back, that was very much around that and the importance of that. So I think that's a great shout.
Well, Robert, we'll be bringing you back on here, I hope, numerous times, multiple times, maybe.
If he hasn't got all that money from the wand.
I'm looking for this magic wand. What have you done with it?
I've locked it in a drawer.
Oh, damn.
Can't be trusted. No. But listen, thank you so much, Robert, for giving up your Friday morning, coming in to say hello.
Absolute pleasure, Joe. I'm very happy to come back anytime you want me to.
Fantastic. Thanks, Robert.
And thank you, Micheál.
Thanks, Robert. All the best.
Cheers, Mel.
We've reached the end of our first podcast, first episode of our monthly podcast. How do you feel it went?
It's been a blast, Joe. You described it as a perilous journey earlier. I think I couldn't have a better companion on this dark and treacherous road.
Well, I for one feel we've emerged relatively unscathed, and I hope our listeners. Please, guys, I know it's the first one, and these things start very small, and we get a little bit of momentum going, hopefully. And tell your friends, tell your enemies, in fact. tell everybody to come and listen. Share the link with your friends and neighbours and everything else, and through your social media groups and all that. And let us know, mainly. My ask today is let us know what you want to hear, and we will do our best to bring it to your ears.
I suppose what I would like to say at the end is just that I certainly hope I haven't put anybody off the idea of contacting campaigns. But if you are interested in what we've been talking about and in getting your voices heard, I'd love to hear from you. You could email us at campaignsni@rnib.org.uk we'll get a conversation going. There's plenty of spaces for people to have their voices heard, and I'd love to help you do it. So that's all from me, I guess. I'm going to go and work on my podcast voice for a month.
Oh, Micheál, no need at all. You've got a golden voice. Listen, folks, thank you so much indeed for listening to our first episode. As Micheál says, if you do have a query or you want to find out more about the kind of policy campaign side of RNIB's work here in Northern Ireland, just give the guys an email at campaignsni@rnib.org.uk. You can, if you want to talk about the podcast itself or any other service, for example, the best email address would be rnibni@rnib.org.uk. Let us know what you think of this podcast, good, bad, indifferent. If you want to hear some specific topic discussed or you have an idea for a content issue, please do let us know. We'll be back next month in September, at the end of September, with another exciting edition. And I can't wait, actually. I've really enjoyed this, so I hope you have too. It's great to be back doing this. Some guys might remember the Crack On and even Sound Vision Ulster days. Well, this is sort of a version of that, if you like. It's here to provide a platform where we can have a conversation, and that's what I think I want to get across. Just to say, please contact us, rnibni.org.uk. You can find us on Facebook, search for RNIB Northern Ireland. We're on Blue Sky at RNIB Northern Ireland. Of course, what I would like to also add is if you want to reach out to RNIB and to find information on support services, please do call our helpline on 0303 123 9999, and our helpline team will be able to direct your call to the appropriate service. But thank you very much indeed for listening, guys, and we'll speak to you next month.
Indeed, thank you. Talk to you soon, folks. All the best.
Differently.